Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. And on this week's show, we're going to have a talk with Dean Blasey, whose name you might recognize, and we'll talk with him about some of his important contributions to the blindness field.
But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Dean Blasey.
And I was lucky because I had Tim Cranmer, for one, and I hired a lot of blind people to work with me, and they ended up really telling me, you know, what it should do. It certainly didn't come from me, because how would I know? You know, I'm sighted.
And so that's how Dean described the success of some of his ventures, being associated with having blind folks as developers and as testers and users of the products he was developing.
I think when you're developing any product, it's really important to have a representative sample of your end users involved in helping you decide what features to include. This is just a particular case where his end users were all going to be blind, and he wasn't, so he made sure to include blind people in the decision-making process, and also in then fulfilling all of those requirements and developing the products to include all of those features.
As I was telling Dean during our chat, in the early 90s, when Xerox moved from using MS-DOS to Windows 3.1, I had to look for a solution that would enable me to access Windows 3.1. And I had tried four or five different screen readers at the time, and they were all just, they worked kind of, but they were kind of terrible. And I was just about to give up when I finally tried JAWS for Windows. And voila, it worked very well at the time. And, you know, I finally thought about it. The reason it worked was many of the developers and people working at Freedom Scientific, which was Henter Joyce at the time, were blind. And so these people had to make it work. They really had an incentive to get it right.
Because they were going to be using it.
And I still use JAWS to this day.
Turning now to our low-tech item, let's meet Dean Blasey.
I'm Dean Blasey, and people probably know me for the work I've done in the blindness field. That's pretty much what I've done most of my life. They might know my products, the Braille and Speak and the Braille Light and the Braille Blazer printer. I guess those are the three main products that we sold and sold quite a few of. And I'm retired about 10 years ago after selling the business to Freedom Scientific, and I've been really enjoying it.
Boy, it was great talking with Dean to, first of all, reminisce about computers in the old days, the days of the Z80 chips and the first personal computers. But also, you might remember many of these groundbreaking products, some of the first portable note takers for the blind.
So he's got a fascinating history. And we asked him not only about some of these products that he was instrumental in developing, but also how he got started in the first place working on access technology.
So we thought we'd, you know, get into a little bit some of the details and walk through kind of your history and contributions to the field of accessibility and blindness. I was kind of curious, how did you first get involved in the accessibility field?
I got involved when I was a teenager. I was a ham radio operator and met a blind fellow, Tim Cranmer, who was an inventor. And he asked me if I'd like to work for him on weekends. And of course, I needed a job, needed money. And so I worked for him pretty much through 2 years of high school and 4 years of college. Worked every Saturday and sometimes other times. And for him, I would do the things that you might expect, a little bit of house cleaning, tidying up, fixing things around the house, opening mail, reading to him. I was a pretty poor reader at the time, and so that didn't work really well, but I read to him a lot, and we read some technical journals.
And you just happened to be neighbors or something?
No, we were in the same town, Frankfort, Kentucky, and we were starting a ham radio club, and it was at one of those meetings that I met Tim. And had a chance to talk to him, and he was looking for someone to do some work around the house. So we got together and became really good friends, in addition to employer-employee. He was an inventor. I suppose most people, or a lot of people, will know Tim. He invented a lot of things.
I was thinking the name reminded me of the Cranmer Brailler?
Yes. In fact, he was behind the Cranmer Brailer, yes, which we eventually called the Perky, or people referred to it as Perky. But yeah, Tim Maxey made that product and we manufactured it.
Boy, talk about working your way up from the bottom. When he started working with Tim Cranmer, he was literally sweeping the floors.
Sometimes that's what makes some of the best engineers, as the people that enjoy it when they're young and they just tinker around and get into it just for the love of it, you know, and that passion comes across in their final work. And you'll surely see where Dean ended up with some of his projects later on in the show.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
For this week's focus topic, we'll talk with Dean Blasey about some of the products that he developed over the years. He started out small and simple.
I started out making these little things called page markers. You know, when you listen to some talking books, they put a page marker at the beginning of each page.
Oh, the tone indexing?
The tone indexing, yes. I used to make those boxes and sell them. I probably made 50 to 100 of those and sold them to various people that wanted to record those tones on tape and make tapes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And Tim developed that technology, and I made the little boxes, and eventually they started building them into recorders. So I was selling those after I got out of college and sold a few of those. And I've always, I guess, had an entrepreneurial spirit to where I wanted to own and run a business.
Boy, does that bring back old memories. You think of these days, we're so used to navigating back and forth very quickly and jumping from place to place with our digital material. But back in the old days of cassette tapes, you had to rewind to listen to all the beeps go beep, 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 as you were looking for the page in your book where you wanted to be.
Yeah, well, as a sighted person, I don't have access to such nice audio recording finer points. You know, if I want to find where I left off in a book, I still have to search forward, search backwards, see if I remember if I read that part or not. I'm jealous.
We can be somewhat advantaged with our Bookport Pluses and similar devices these days.
Dean's first company was a general software house, but a phone call from Tim Cranmer provided the impetus to move into accessibility products.
In 1976, we started Maryland Computer Services, just writing software for local businesses. And Tim called me one time, and while we were in business, and said, you know, I can employ a lot of people in the state of Kentucky if we could figure out a way for a blind person to look up a telephone number. And I could employ them as telephone operators for the state, because the state employed quite a few people, you know, and they had thousands of employees. So you needed to be able to look up a phone number and pretty quickly. So we just happened at our business to have a Hewlett-Packard desktop computer, and we adapted it with a speech board. In fact, the speech board came out of Telesensory Speech Plus Calculator. You probably remember that. And we bought that and interfaced it to our desktop computer and wrote some programs and ended up with what we call the talking telephone directory. And you type in a piece of a name, and it would find the candidate for the name and speak the phone number.
The speech synthesis was pretty crude back in those days, too.
It was. In fact, the one we had in the talking telephone directory only spoke numbers and a few letters. It wouldn't even do full speech, so you couldn't really speak back a name.
So you didn't use phonemes. These were recorded?
Yeah, these were recorded. Yes, recorded voices that actually they were on microchips, so the technology was just beginning to get small enough to do it.
Boy, back then, some of the speech synthesizers that used to use phonemes were absolutely terrible. I remember having a little Votrax box that hooked up to an RS-232 port, a serial port on your computer, and it was practically unintelligible. But these ones with pre-recorded specific words in them that Dean talks about were a lot more understandable, but a lot more limited in terms of what they could speak.
Anyway, as Dean was talking about, in the mid-80s, some of the available technology was pretty crude by today's standards, but as the technology improved, he was able to make more and more sophisticated products.
Back in the Maryland Computer Services days, we were using Hewlett-Packard computers, and after we made this talking telephone directory, we found a speech board that could do all the letters of the alphabet, plus all the punctuation. So I took a Hewlett-Packard, I think it was a 2621 computer terminal, and it had a Z80 inside.
I remember those chips.
Yeah, great, Jeff. So I asked Hewlett-Packard if I could get the source code for that so I could interface it to a speech board, make a talking computer terminal. And after months of negotiating, they finally sent me this huge listing about, I guess it was about almost a foot tall, of Z80 code printed out.
Oh, gosh.
And I use that code, and I interface this speech board to the printer port on that Z80, and I made a thing called a T-term. And it was a talking terminal, but it only spoke letters. So we started selling them, and guess who buys one? A blind man in Florida who had just lost his sight and was learned how to do program computers. He was working for a hotel chain. And so he would call me up and say, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? You know, and I said, look, I'm taking a trip down to Florida next week. You mind if I stop by and sit down and we'll talk about it? So I went down and there was Ted Hinter. And he told me a lot about how the terminal should work because he was a programmer. But can you imagine Ted doing COBOL programming for this company with a computer terminal that could only speak the letters of the alphabet?
Oh, heavens.
I just can't fathom it. But here he was. He was doing it, and he was gainfully employed. And about a year later, I had Ted come to work for me, and we developed the TotalTalk, which is the same thing, except it had a full speech capability.
How cool. Wow.
I still remember Ted and I sitting down going over how should commands work. And that's when we developed, which is essentially still used in JAWS, a speech pad where you use the numeric pad.
Oh, right.
And, you know, you've got up, down, left, and right, and line, word, character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we developed that, and it had to be about 1990 or so. Oh, I'm sorry. No, this was in the early 80s before Blazy Engineering. So it had to be like in 83 or 4.
You know, it's incredible when you think of years ago how crude some of the tools were and how limited the memory was, but the really neat things that people were able to accomplish by being clever and industrious. The other thing I thought was neat from talking to Dean was just how all these names you've always heard about, Tim Cranmer, Ted Hinter from Hinter Joyce, the originator of JAWS, you know, all these people kind of knew each other and worked these technologies and matured them over the years together.
Cooperation and collaboration are wonderful things. Despite the initial success of Maryland Computer Services, they eventually ran into some rough times, but afterwards, Dean picked up the pieces and started all over again.
We ended up, 10 years later in 1985, having to sell the business. That's when interest rates were 22%. So we were in pretty deep financial debt.
So that's how you got out of Maryland Computing Services. Was that about the time you started Blazy Incorporated?
Yeah, in fact, it was like February of 1986 that we ended up selling the company at the last minute. Enabling Technologies, back then it was something else. They ended up buying part of it. And so I got out from under the debt and was doing consulting work. But I always had in the back of my mind making a note taker for the blind. After I got over the agony of losing the business and being employed as a consultant, I started thinking about it. And in my basement, I started developing the Braille and Speak.
And that is another amazing story that we continue to ask Dean about.
1987 is when I took it to the NFB convention. I remember asking my wife if I could spend $10,000 to make these 10 prototypes. And surprisingly, she said, well, if you think we can sell some. So I figured, well, yeah, eventually we could sell probably 100 of these things. And so I made the prototypes and took, I think, 6 or 8 of them to the NFB convention. And I came back, I sold all of those. I came back with checks in my pocket. I came back with cash. I came back with credit card numbers because everybody wanted one. I mean, it was amazing how many people looked at it and felt it and played with it and said, I've got to have one. And they were willing to pay me up front because, of course, I didn't have enough cash to really start a business. So for the next few years, my wife and I built these things in the basement of our house and sold them. And here, I guess, 15 years later, we ended up selling 50 or 60,000 of them.
Is your wife an engineer also?
No, she's not. She's mostly a mother and took care of the house, but she helped manage the office and did the paperwork and the billing and all of the things I didn't like to do.
And assemble a few units in the basement.
Well, she helped with that. Yeah, she'd do the packaging.
What a great story, though. I mean, here's someone who identified a need, figured out a way to satisfy that need, and turned this into a real success story that really helped out, you know, thousands of people around the world, and then turned this into a nice family business. It had to be a lot of fun and very rewarding.
Yeah, apparently he had one or two of his kids in the basement building units as well. For people who might not know, can you describe what the Braille and Speak was?
Well, I wasn't very familiar with these because they were a little bit before my time, but essentially what it was a little device about the size of a video cassette, and they had a Braille keyboard on there and a speech synthesizer inside, and so you could type in Braille and then hear what you typed in. And it acted as a simple note taker. It had an RS-232 port so you could interact with a computer. It had maybe a calendar and a timer and things like that. But Dean wasn't satisfied to keep it there, and he later found ways of expanding these products, as popular as they were at the time.
The Braille and Speak, after a while, I guess initially we decided we'd never make a Braille version of it, you know, with a Braille display. But right around, I think, the early 90s, Telesensory decided that they were going to get rid of the VersaBraille and stop making it. And so right around that time, I said, well, shoot, somebody needs to take up, you know, where that left off. So we took a Braille display. In fact, we bought them from Telesensory, the Braille displays, and hooked it up to the Braille and Speak. And it came out with what we call the Braille Light. You can still see those around. There's quite a few people that still have them.
That I remember, yeah. In fact, I used to have one of the early VersaBraille systems.
Okay.
Yeah.
The one that had the cassette?
Yes, yeah. In fact, I remember being at home with a 300 baud modem programming on some timeshared computer that way.
Wow. But at any rate, we ended up making the Braille Light, and that did really well, especially since Telesensory dropped the VersaBraille. We picked up all those customers, and it wasn't too many years later we ended up buying the blindness division of Telesensory.
Oh.
They just got into the low vision business, and we took over the Braille displays and the printers and all of that.
Those tools were really great enablers for the blind back in those days. The first time that, you know, a blind person could take refreshable Braille displays, portable note takers, be able to do their job anyplace and not have to walk around with a whole lot of equipment.
I remember when you first got one of those and you were so excited because you could sit somewhere comfortable, like on the sofa, and do what you wanted, where you wanted. And I'm like, well, yeah, I've always been doing that, but you hadn't been able to. You would always had to be scrunched up in front of some array of equipment.
Oh, it was a huge thing. I mean, plus I could take it to meetings and take notes in meetings without using a slate and stylus or a Braille printer or something like that. So it was a real enabler. You couldn't separate me from the thing.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I can vouch for that. Blazy Engineering had a really long, successful run. They put out all sorts of very popular and useful products and eventually was bought by Freedom Scientific.
Then around 2000, you sold the company to Freedom Scientific and they collected Arkenstone and Henter Joyce. How did that all work out?
You know, I really didn't have any intention of getting out of the business. I loved what I was doing and having a good time with it. I guess I was about 53 years old. And my friend Ted Henter, he and I were good friends. Ted used to work for Maryland Computer Services. He and I designed the, it was called the Total Talk, which was a talking terminal, you know, an RS-232 terminal that you might have used at Xerox, in fact. Mm-hmm. Hewlett-Packard made the terminal, and then Ted and I added the speech and the software. And so Ted and I worked together at Maryland Computer Services until we shut their business down. And at that point, he left to develop JAWS, and I left to start Blazy Engineering. So at any rate, you know, Ted was doing well with JAWS, and it was a fellow out trying to get into the business. Dick Chandler was his name. He was in the medical business before this, and he saw an opportunity in the assistive technology business to buy up some companies and make a larger company with a lot of different products. And so he started with Ted and I and said, you know, you guys interested in selling? And I really wasn't at first, but then after thinking about it, and I decided, yeah, why not? It's a good time to do it. So Ted and I met with Dick, and we worked out a deal, and then Arkenstone came into the deal right after we did, and they ended up buying all three of us and created Freedom Scientific.
You really have to admire the entrepreneurial spirit and you know, the dedication of these people to making these tools work for the blind and you know, enabling people to be more easily employed and do their tasks.
and be very grateful to them. Now for this week's high-tech item. Just because Dean Blasey sold Blasey Engineering and nominally retired doesn't mean he stopped working on exciting new projects and continuing his innovating spirit.
Yeah, we can tell you retirement doesn't necessarily mean that life is over. There are plenty of things to be done.
Thank goodness. Brian McDonald, the president of the National Braille Press, first put us in touch with Dean Blasey and suggested we might want to talk with him about some of his current projects. Brian McDonald indicated you were still doing some engineering work for them?
Yes. About 3 years ago, Diane Croft from National Braille Press called and wanted to know if I would attend the meeting up there. They were trying to shift NBP into the 20th century, the way they put it. 21st century, I guess it was back then. But anyhow, Brian McDonald was a new president. Bill Rader had retired, and Brian thought, you know, why are we still printing Braille so much? We really have got to somehow get this business into the mode of electronics and computers. So he called a meeting of myself, Noel Runyon, and about a half a dozen people. And we were sitting around talking about the technology and coming out with something better. And so I offered to help them to do a note taker, like the Braille and Speak. And the stipulation was that it had to be inexpensive. So in other words, it couldn't be another commercial product to compete with the commercial guys, but it had to make a difference. So we set a price of about $2,500 and set out to develop a note taker at that price with the Braille display. And that's probably close to half of what they sell for right now. So we're working on it, and we picked Android for an operating system. And I have in front of me, actually, I have one of these. This one's working, and I've got Android running on it, and I can move up and down the screen and read things and get on and browse the internet. It's a pretty neat device. It looks a lot like a Braille Light. The keyboard's shaped differently. It's smaller than a Braille Light, but it's got a lot more in it. It's got a 1 gigahertz processor running, and it runs a, you know, an operating system where you can run all these applications. It's a pretty neat product, and we hope to be showing it this summer at some conferences.
And this is what they're calling the B2G?
Yes, but it stands for Braille to Go, and it's a really cool little box. It's going to be a really nice product, and I'm really happy with it now because seeing it work is finally very, very satisfying.
If you want to hear a little bit more about the B2G, we talked with Brian McDonald about it in show 1212, which was actually part two of a two-part mini-series on this year's CSUN conference. But near the end of show 1212, Brian McDonald describes the B2G device.
And I think Brian is now currently working with Verizon and other cell phone carriers to get the B2G certified to work on some of these systems.
And wouldn't that be exciting?
That would be.
Well, that's exciting, but it's not the only exciting new project Dean Blasey is working on.
Brian seemed to indicate that you keep pretty active in the accessibility field in other ways, too.
Well, let's see. I'm working on another project also with him, National Federation of the Blind, and American Printing House. They're all funding it. And I don't know if you remember the name Romeo, Mike Romeo.
Well, I know the Romeo printers.
Yeah, he was the inventor of the Romeo printer. He worked for me at Maryland Computer Services, and we were working on the Romeo Brailler, is what we were going to name it. And when we sold to Enabling Technologies, they finished it, and they still sell it, I guess. At any rate, Mike Romeo, I captured him about a year ago and said, hey, Mike, do you want to work on a full-page Braille display with me? So Mike is down in Florida at an office, and he's working on a full-page Braille technology, and we work together on it. We may have something to show this summer. I'm not sure.
That sounds like a pretty big project. What's the technology used to do that?
It's a pretty low-tech approach to it because we want this thing to be reasonably priced. And all the high-tech approaches are too expensive. So we said, why not just come up with a latching mechanism and then run a moving head underneath and push dots up just like you would like with it if you were embossing Braille. That's a pretty simplified way to describe it, but it's pretty much what we have. We have this plate which has essentially a full page of Braille, and underneath that are these latches. And the latches are pretty unique. It uses very, very tiny little ball bearings that move back and forth and make the dot stay up or come down. And under that, you have a print head that moves left and right and up and down. It paints the page of Braille as it moves.
Oh, interesting.
So you basically have a one-cell Braille display showing up underneath each location in like a raster format?
Yeah, and it paints their displays. So what you feel is a full page of Braille.
Right.
But it's being painted. Right now, it's being painted one cell at a time. In actual production, you'd probably paint either a line at a time or a whole bunch of cells at once because it would be too slow otherwise.
Right. How long does it take you to paint a page?
Right now, it would probably take a minute or more to paint a page. But after we prove the technology and get the print head down to something that works, then we can add multiple print heads and multiple lines. And so you could probably end up printing a page pretty quickly in a matter of seconds instead of a minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty good for a whole page.
We also think that probably you don't really need a full page. If you're just reading, probably five lines would be enough.
Right.
So you could be refreshing the bottom while you're reading the top.
Right. Sometimes even a low-tech solution, along with a clever idea, works pretty well until the cost of the higher-tech technologies come down a little bit.
But this one sounds really exciting. I think that would be very handy.
That would be something to look forward to. People have been talking about full-page Braille displays for a long time, and we haven't really seen that.
Well, when you consider the cost of a 40-cell or 80-cell display, thinking about making a full page, that would just be prohibitively expensive with the current technologies.
You would have to take a mortgage out on your printer.
Yeah, right. So it's nice to know that somebody's been creative and thinking out of the box in order to create a box that maybe somebody could afford.
Well, we'll keep watch of that, and we'll keep in touch with Dean to see how that's coming along.
And we'll let you know if we find out anything interesting. That's it for show 1225. Next week is our half-year point, and we're having a special show next week, including clips from an interview that Lynn Leith of the DAISY Consortium did of us. So we'll be talking with her about viewpoints and how we got into that and some other interesting tidbits, or at least we hope you think they are. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.